From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Ron Howard makes his sexy race car movie Rush without the backing of a big studio. Plus, Howard talks about his first documentary, Made in America, and his unlikely collaboration with hip-hop artist Jay-Z. But first, big drama at NBC Universal, and it's not happening on the big screen. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, a very big news week in terms of NBC Universal, and we'll start with the film studio, Universal. One of the most abrupt and really shocking firings that we've had a bunch of firings in this industry lately of studio heads, but this one is, it really stands out.
It really stands out because Universal was riding very high. They're very close to Warner Brothers right now for the biggest market share at the box office, coming off a very strong summer with Fast and the Furious 6, Despicable Me 2. Recently, they had Ted. They just totally on a roll. They felt like a studio that was completely working. And they came back from the Toronto International Film Festival and heads rolled.
Yes, and this was one of these corporate intrigue tales. You know, Ron Meyer has been the Uber boss, let's put it that way, of Universal for a long time now, I think 18 years, former agent. He's seen so many regime changes at Universal. And a couple of years ago, Comcast, the cable giant, bought the company, bought NBC Universal. And people were speculating in your newspaper, in my publication, that Ron Meyer was being marginalized, that his long career, a storied career, was coming to an end. And he just rose up from the ashes because the bosses at NBC Universal wanted to bring in Jeff Shell, a guy who is a favored son coming from the world of Comcast, a real business guy, not a movie guy at all. And they knew that they couldn't bring him in without having Ron Meyer there to act as a mentor. So instead of tossing Ron Meyer out the door, they kept Ron Meyer, elevated him to a higher level corporate job. And he is there as the guardian of Jeff Shell, who is, by all accounts, a very well-regarded business executive. But as I said, the problem is, has never made a movie.
Yeah, and in the midst of that, they tossed out Adam Fogelson, who's been at Universal from 1998. He was the chairman of the movie studio, kind of not quite equal, a little bit above Donna Langley, who was promoted into his job. Adam comes out of marketing. Donna Langley kind of more out of film production. But whatever tensions there were between them professionally, the studio was operating and functioning. Nobody thought that Universal was the kind of place that was going to have this kind of upheaval.
And they were all in Toronto, Ron Meyer and Adam Fogelson, together at the Toronto Film Festival. And the next day, boom, he actually ends up finding out through the media that he has lost his job. I will say, though, John, that, you know, the success that Universal enjoyed, there is an asterisk. I mean, Despicable Me 2 comes from Chris Meledandre, who runs Illumination Entertainment, who's been a guest on this show. And Adam Fogelson can't really claim any credit for that. Meledandre has his own relationship with NBC Universal Chairman Steve Burke. And then, you know, amongst all the success, they did have this movie RIPD, a huge loser this summer. So the picture was somewhat mixed.
That's not the only thing that Steve Burke has been complaining about. He is very unhappy with how NBC has been doing. He said at a recent conference that NBC earns $500 million to $1 billion less each year than CBS, ABC, and Fox. And he's particularly upset about USA, one of its top cable networks. He thinks that their ad rates are about 20% lower than Time Warner's TNT and TBS. So he thinks that NBC is leaving tons of money on the table, and it's not just Universal that has problems.
They've had nothing but trouble, really, at NBC, except for Sunday Night Football. They just can't seem to get a primetime schedule that really works. And, you know, a lot of people are questioning whether Bob Greenblatt, who runs NBC, is the right guy in the right job, and they're sort of watching and waiting to see how much patience the network has. You know, he spent a lot of energy on Smash, the Broadway musical show that just would not work. Very expensive, didn't work at all. Now he's very passionate about a live event coming up, which is a remake of The Sound of Music, starring Carrie Underwood, which just sounds like such an unlikely play for broadcast TV. And of course, he was in the news recently with the Hillary Clinton miniseries, which stirred huge controversy and problems for the network, too.
Yeah, the one part of the company that Steve Burke is very excited about are theme parks. Theme parks are valued, I think, about $8 billion in his mind now, far greater than the $1 billion that he put on them a couple of years ago. And that's largely in part to some of the new attractions they have, which includes a very popular Harry Potter attraction in Orlando that will soon be coming to Southern California and Japan.
Yeah, and speaking of Harry Potter, Warner Brothers announced a big deal this past week. They, you know, had seen a very good run with Harry Potter movies, theme parks, etc., big etc., and now they have extended their relationship with J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, and it could be, down the road, something very big.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter novels, said this is not a sequel or a prequel, but an extension of her Harry Potter franchise. It's based on a secondary character named Newton Scamander, who is an author and former head of Hogwarts. And he wrote a book that is kind of part of the Harry Potter canon called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And the interesting thing is it's not just one movie, but a series of movies. But Rowling is going to write the screenplay herself. So this is an original screenplay based on a minor character who wrote kind of a minor book in the history of Harry Potter. But obviously, Harry Potter, hugely important to Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, this is a coup for Kevin Sugihara, who's the new CEO at Warner Brothers. There's a kind of a parallel to what we were talking about before. You know, just as NBC Universal brought in a business guy with no particular film experience, this guy Jeff Shell, who is now going to be in charge of Universal, Warner Brothers promoted Kevin Sugihara, who also has no particular experience making film or television. He was a much more of a business guy, the MBA, the suit, who had been in digital and home entertainment before he became head of the studio. And for him to land J.K. Rowling is a triumph.
Yeah, in many ways, it's almost like a brand deal, like you're forming a partnership with Mattel. J.K. Rowling is obviously a creative person, but we're talking about theme parks, merchandise, TV shows for some of her books. This is a global play for probably the most popular author for children and young adults right now. We probably won't see one of these movies for a couple of years, but I suspect they will be huge once they come out.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Coming up this week, you can hear a special online-only TV roundtable edition of The Business moderated by Mike Schneider of TV Guide magazine. He'll be joined by Joe Adalian of Vulture and A.J. Marischal of Variety. They'll dig deep into the world of television in the run-up to the Emmys. You can find it online at kcrw.com/thebusiness. Coming up, Ron Howard. The movie Rush is based on the true story of a bitter 1970s rivalry between two top Formula One race car drivers. Chris Hemsworth stars as handsome British playboy James Hunt, while Daniel Brühl plays his cold and uncharismatic Austrian rival Niki Lauda.
I accept every time I get in my car, there's 20% chance I could die, and I can live with it, but not 1% more. And today with the rain, the risk is more.
I suppose that all depends on how good you are in the rain.
I have the track record here. I'm the only person in history to do the ring in under 7 minutes. So actually, it's to my advantage to race it today. Because I'm quicker than all of you.
Fine. Then let's race.
The script for Rush came from Peter Morgan, who wrote The Queen and Frost Nixon. Originally, it was to be directed by Paul Greengrass, but when he dropped out to do the upcoming film Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks, Ron Howard stepped enthusiastically in. Rush is more than just a race car movie. It's exactly the sort of medium-priced adult drama that the big studios are so reluctant to make these days. And indeed, the studios had passed on the project by the time Howard got involved. But he felt so strongly about the material that he was prepared to make Rush his first indie movie since his 1977 directorial debut, Grand Theft Auto. That film was produced by the king of B-movies, Roger Corman. Howard, who started in show business as a very little boy, evolved into an A-list director who for many years got nothing but velvet glove treatment from the studios. As the industry has been roiled by change, he's showing exceptional resilience. When we reached him at the Toronto International Film Festival, he had just done a Facebook Q&A with fans. He has more than 700,000 followers on Twitter and tweeted throughout the production of Rush. I asked him if this kind of social media interaction is what's required of filmmakers today.
You know, we're probably all encouraged to do it. I only got involved with the tweeting because I found it kind of fun. Jon Favreau was doing a lot of it and talking to me about how much he enjoyed it. Henry Winkler is pretty avid. I began following him. And I just realized that without trying to curate anything or, you know, share wisdom or be witty, that if I did something that I naturally do anyway, which is just click a lot of pictures and just select a few every day or so and share those, that people were responding to that and liking it. So it really became kind of a hobby. And, you know, I don't know how much it means from a promotional standpoint, to be honest. I'm honestly a little skeptical. Do people really decide they're going to go out and see a movie because they might follow somebody on Twitter? I don't know. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it as a kind of a natural outlet. And I also like the fact that makes me a little bit more conscious of the photos I take. And that's kind of always good for me. It kind of keeps me sharp. You know, I think it's an interesting creative exercise.
So you have had an extraordinarily long career in the business, starting at a very young age, and you've been through these huge transformations in recent years, you know, and I'm thinking not just as an actor, but as a principal in Imagine. Mm-hmm. Imagine went public when that was a big thing to do for production companies to raise money. And then you and your partner, Brian Grazer, were huge players at Universal. And there was that moment when you guys did Grinch, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and suddenly people started having a heart attack about grosses. And I wonder, when you see the whole span of where you're arriving today at a film that you financed independently, there's no studio, do you look back at all of that? What do you make of all of that transformation? Do you think things could have been done differently or should have been done differently, or is this just the way it evolved?
You know, it's free markets doing their thing. It's economics in motion. And I take all of that in a way with a sort of a grain of salt. I mean, certainly it affects me on a bottom line kind of basis. But truth be told, I'm not really much of a businessman. I've never really thought of my personal bottom line as sort of an imperative in forming the decisions that I make about what I'm going to work on next. You know, I want to do the best I can. I want to be as smart about it as I can be. But generally, I think that people like me do best when we're working from some instinctual place. And I think if you let business decisions affect that too much, you know, it's probably a bad idea. In some ways, I think as the economics have shifted, I think in some ways filmmakers, you know, above the line creative partners have probably become bolder. You know, I mean, I look at this crop of movies coming out this year. I don't know if it's just a fluke, but I haven't seen very many of them. But, you know, it sounds like a fascinating and kind of experimental fall and winter coming up. I think it's, you know, as a fan, I'm incredibly excited about that. And it makes me wonder, what's fueling that? Is that a fluke? Or is it that people feel like, well, you know, I'm not preoccupied doing studio movies because they're not making the kinds of movies that we're, you know, most excited about. So if we're going to take a risk, we're going to take a risk on something that we're passionate about. By the same token, you know, we recognize that it's not easy. It's a kind of a gauntlet to get a movie made, more so than in the past. And, you know, and maybe that's bringing out everybody's A game. I don't know. Maybe the great work being done in cable television is inspiring film writers and directors and actors to dig even deeper. Who knows? I'm just theorizing now.
Yeah, I've wondered the same thing, to be honest. I wondered if it was a combination of what you were talking about, plus the bar being higher to get financing so that the quality of the material has to be more, maybe it has to be more baked or more interesting or more attractive, you know, in a special way.
You know, you have to make your case in a more fervent way, a more passionate way. And that's probably never a bad thing for artists. And what I think is interesting is it's not chasing people away. The dirty little secret is that most people who are involved in this, of course, they want to do well, they want to make whatever they can make, but most people, they want to express themselves. Maybe I'm speaking for myself there, but I don't think so. I think that's pretty pervasive.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Like other A-list filmmakers, Ron Howard has felt the impact of changing times in the movie business. In 2011, Howard's home studio, Universal, pulled the plug on his ambitious plan to adapt the Stephen King book series, The Dark Tower, into 3 feature films and a TV show. That project was a collaboration with screenwriter Akiva Goldsman, who won an Oscar for writing the script for Howard's 2001 film, A Beautiful Mind. But Universal decided Dark Tower was just too expensive and too risky. That would free Howard to direct Rush, his first independently financed movie in 36 years. I asked him whether Dark Tower is still a maybe.
It's I think it's more than a maybe, but we've all made a decision not to reveal very much about what we're doing, other than to admit that Stephen King is still very supportive, with Akiva and I working on trying to solve it. And you know, we continue to learn more and more about the Dark Tower universe and what we think, you know, a great way into that world would be. Still have ambitions of blending the mediums, but no timetable at the moment. However, you know, a day doesn't go by where there isn't a discussion, and there is, you know, further development work underway. Jeff Pinkner is involved doing some work on a script right now while Akiva is finishing up directing Winter's Tale.
So when you went to finance, Rush was financed independently with incentives from the UK and Germany and selling off the rights, and you went to the American film market. I don't know if you've done that before.
I never had, no. And the film was underway.
Let me just pause and say the American film market is this trade show where buyers come from all over the world, and a lot of times what they're bidding on is genre movies or B movies, you know, or maybe art house movies. I just wanted to put that in context.
I didn't actually realize quite how rare a thing it was for a director in what was going to hopefully be a high-profile drama with a broad international and U.S. release. But I was asked to go, and I found it a really interesting exercise. But, you know, I've been pitching movies and TV shows to either networks, you know, affiliates, studios, or, you know, or Roger Corman since I was about 23 years old. So I found it actually a really informative, interesting day and an opportunity to test my ideas about the movie against what turned out to be a sort of this broad focus group.
Who asked you to go? And did you feel like, I'm Ron Howard. I can't believe I have to do this.
The people from Exclusive Media asked me to go. You know, Rogue Sutherland at CAA seconded the idea. And I didn't think that because, you know, my attitude is if this is the way things get done, then so be it. I'm not too prideful in that regard. And my attitude about it all is that things do change. And rather than despair over that, it's better to try to read the landscape and respond quickly. And my aim is to make movies that I care about and that I'm excited about and make them with collaborators that I'm excited to be in the trenches with. And there's always this sort of need to bridge the gap between the creative community's sense of what they'd like to do and what the industrial side of the entertainment industry, you know, believes they want to invest in.
After a short break, Ron Howard takes the long view of the movie business and responds to Steven Spielberg's dire prediction about the future of the studios. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness.
Hi, this is Fred Savage, and if you're like me, you turn to The Business every week to catch up on what's going on in show business. It's informative. If you're also like me, you are benefiting from a free service provided to you from KCRW. And the way you can say thank you and keep this and other great programming on the air is by visiting kcrw.com/join and become a member of this station.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Ron Howard and his longtime producing partner, Brian Grazer, run Imagine Entertainment. And for many years, they had one of the richest producing deals in the industry. But the business has changed, and now, as we've often discussed on the show, the studios are devoting their resources to big event movies, often based on cartoon heroes, very different from the sort of material that has been the basis for Howard's best work. But Ron Howard's career seems to be a kind of case study in adaptation. Having made the transition from child star to A-list filmmaker, he is once again evolving. He's embraced social media, and he didn't balk at making Rush despite the lack of studio backing. It's his first independent film in decades. Howard also continues to have eclectic tastes. He's been the director of hit films as varied as Parenthood, Apollo 13, and The Da Vinci Code. He's won Emmys for producing Arrested Development and the HBO miniseries From the Earth to the Moon. Recently, he also took on the challenge of directing his first documentary, the behind-the-scenes look at hip-hop artist Jay-Z's 2012 Made in America Music Festival in Philadelphia. Howard jumped into that unfamiliar territory while he was still working on his new race car movie, Rush.
It came at a moment where I had reached a point with the Rush post-production that I needed to step away for a week or 10 days. The editors were going to go and do some work to prepare for a screening. I needed a kind of palate cleanser, and this just happened to fit perfectly into that schedule, and I'm glad it happened quickly because I might have talked myself out of it. But I didn't. I went, I had a meeting with Jay-Z and with others involved, and I said, look, I'm not a documentary filmmaker, and I don't know a lot about the music world. And Jay-Z kind of smiled and said, well, I think exactly. I think we're all curious to see what, you know, to understand what you see, for you to share that. So that was it. That was my mandate. I had the support of a great production unit put together by Radical Media. They have a lot of experience, you know, in a lot of areas, including music documentaries. So I felt protected there and just took the leap. So, you know, I had a point of view as to what I wanted to, the way I wanted to approach it. I had a private conversation with Jonathan Demme, who's a friend, and we're both on the board of the Jacob Burns Film Center in Westchester County. And after a board meeting, I asked him, you know, what it was like to make a documentary. I said, I might make my first one. And he was so encouraging. He said, oh, you're going to love it. He said, just don't have a lot of preconceived ideas. Go there and see what you see and share that. And that's what I did. And it was the sort of the outcome of the film is actually one part exactly what I thought I was going for, in that it shows kind of, you know, it takes a multidimensional look at an enterprise like a festival like that coming together in Philadelphia means to the community, means to the artists, means to the people working there, behind the scenes, means to the fans. But a lot of the deeper themes were different than I expected them to be. They were far more optimistic than I expected them to be, frankly. And I credit Jay-Z with that. As serious as he is, as honest as he is, as truthful as he is, he also, you know, believes in the individual. He believes in possibilities. He doesn't think he's alone in the ability to change the course of your life, you know. And that feeling was almost everywhere, whether I prompted it with a direct question or not. And it was interesting the way it sort of presented itself, as Jonathan Demme said it would, as one of the central ideas.
I mean, you put yourself in the movie. Was that the concept from the beginning?
They kept encouraging me to be in it, and I kept saying, you know, I'm not Michael Moore, I'm not a documentarian, but I found myself in some pretty amusing situations, and I thought, well, we could use a little comedy relief, so what the hell?
Let me ask you just a couple of questions looking forward, where a couple of players have had something to say about the business lately, and I was curious about your response. Earlier in the summer, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, as I'm sure you know, made this prediction that these movies were becoming so expensive, and certainly we saw a lot of them not work this summer. They thought there could be just an implosion, studios going down. And I know you're familiar with what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
What did you make of their warning?
Well, implosion is a pretty, you know, huge word. But by the same token, I really respect them for saying it. And you know, I know from private conversations that they mean it. It's a cautionary remark from a couple of people who know about as much about creating tent poles as anyone. You know, maybe everyone interprets, you know, a comment like that in his or her own way. I understand what they're saying about the studio system, that making those kinds of huge bets and then offsetting it and filling out the slate with, you know, very modestly budgeted sort of programmer kinds of genre movies is, in a way, creating a world where movies like Rush and other films are sort of forced into another business model. But audiences are proving over and over again, year in and year out over the last 4 or 5 years, that they still have an appetite for those films. And so for studios to abandon them altogether probably doesn't make sense. And it's never manufacturing. And so to sort of follow one sort of overly simplistic business model probably doesn't really ultimately make sense. You know, all of these things kind of circle around. You know, when I look back, I was a part of, with The Music Man and other movies, you know, that period in where studios felt that the best investment they could make would be a big expensive musical or an epic like How the West Was Won or something like that. And that proved to be wrong-headed. Cleopatra, movies like that did nearly crush studios. They certainly crippled them. And sort of what pulled them out of it? Easy Rider and The Godfather, which wasn't an expensive movie when it was made. American Graffiti. These things were not breaking the bank, and yet they were adventuresome creatively, and they were offering audiences, you know, sort of variety. So I see these things kind of cycle through in the same way that, you know, this notion that branded entertainment is a sort of a shocking new breakthrough. Well, when I was a kid actor on The Andy Griffith Show, we had to do, it was in our contract, we had to do commercials for General Foods in character that would be shown right along with the new episodes of The Andy Griffith Show. For the first 3 years of the show, you know, there we were selling Jell-O and boxed cereal and Sanka coffee and things like that. So I don't see the business as really changing seismically. I think these are all just shifts, and shifting is the natural order of things. You know, look, vaudeville died, but did that form of performance change? No, stand-up comedy became something else. Singers and dancers began to express themselves in another way. Styles changed, the business model changed, but the desire audiences had for that for some kind of live performance didn't, and it's still with us.
Well, you've definitely shown a great deal of pragmatism and resilience over, you know, most child actors fall off the tracks when they're like 16, and here you are still adapting to change. So,
well, thank you.
Very impressive.
Somehow, I'm fortunate in that, in the midst of what clearly is, you know, a pretty seismic shift. That, you know, hey, I'm lucky. I have a bank account. I have a great business partner, a company that I believe in. And it's happening at a point in my life where I still have a lot of creative ambition and excitement for what's possible and curiosity for where it's going to lead us. So, you know, certainly I think about it. I analyze it. I try to understand it. And sometimes it worries me. But more often than not, I'm just kind of curious and fascinated by it all and eager to see where it leads us.
Well, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Ron Howard. His new movies are Rush, the race car drama, in theaters September 27th, and Made in America, a documentary airing on Showtime October 11th. You can see trailers for both films on our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can hear the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.